3, 4.
I was a beetle. I crawled across the floor, then I stepped on. Now I don't crawl anymore. I was a beetle. I crawled across
the
floor, then I got stepped on. Now I don't
crawl
anymore.
Take it back with nothing.
But I knew that you didn't do the right thing.
Yeah! You ready?
I don't care how you're doing.
Check, check. This mic. This mic's not on. This mic. Okay. Gracias.
I know what you mean.
Did I hit that?
You don't have to tell me how it feels. Kill.
The Shit Musicians Say podcast and Momentum Media Marketing present the Forearm Shiver Experience.
Well, I hit the record button, so it's recording.
It's recording.
Oh, Bobby J, I just want to say thank you for coming out.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Shanks.
Glad I could help out.
You good in your headphones?
I think so. Sounds
okay.
Good.
Cool. All right.
Keep talking, Bob.
All right. I'll keep talking. What do you want me to say? Should I just start shoveling out Nick Dirt first and foremost?
Yeah. Let it fly.
I know that is what brings him out.
Yeah.
There we go. Having to hear things about himself.
So this will be episode 7. Let's get him, give him some stuff to want to disagree with.
Well, there was one day he was driving the mustard mobile, and he was just pinging from one side of the road to the next. And I was like, Nick, you can't drive like that. And he's like, well, I'm staying on my side of the road, so.
Yeah, he scared me one time driving. Somebody came up behind me, and I was on my way to my house in New Paris, and he was just right on my ass the whole time. And it was, Nick had a different vehicle, and it was him, and I didn't realize it. I was like, who is this guy?
Well, let's kick off. You know, we got Bobby J in the house, and Steve and Frost here, and then Bobby, tell us about you. Let's catch the...
Yeah, where do you fit in the story, sir?
The three
for the audience, we obviously know.
The three or four people that might be listening to this other than us.
Hey, man, I got people in Asia that listen to this shit, so... They don't understand much, but they listen.
Tell us how you're in this story, man.
Well, you know, I met Nick through Ed Cooper a long time ago, because I lived with Ed Cooper, and then Nick was like Ed's illness, because Nick would just come around when Nick wanted to. And I had a lot of friends that hung out in that house, and Nick pissed off every one of them. They're like, how do you like that guy? And I'm like, I don't even know that guy. I'm like, I don't know. But then after a while, somehow he just kind of grows on you
like a fungus.
Yeah, he's got some kind of weird, I don't want to call it a charm, because it's not, but it's a thing about him that it just makes you understand who he is and tolerate it, I guess.
He's so disapproving of everything, you want to be accepted by him.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good part of it.
That might work, but yeah, no, I completely get it, right?
Yeah, and he wants to make sure you're offended no matter what.
Yeah. And maybe just to see your reaction. Who knows?
Who knows?
It's a mystery. Yeah.
Kind of playing into that, that reminded me of something that like just completely escaped me for the longest time, and it just like came right to the forefront of my mind. When we were in Shockproof, me and Nick like fucking hated each other for the most part. So we had Ron on last week. So when Ron got kicked out or left and whatever happened there, and Nick calls me to be in Forearm Shiver, I'm like, you sure you got the right fucking number? Like, we don't really get on along that well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, he used to fucking throw firecrackers at me and shit. Like,
but that does show something about his desire to actually make music, because he was willing to look past
my shortcomings.
Well, you know.
Or his own.
You know, he was just so focused on doing something good. No, that's not Nick.
Never.
But Bobby, I mean, you know, so you got to know Nick, and how did, I mean, the whole band scene. Now, I know you are a music aficionado of good music anyways.
And a bass player himself.
How did that transpire?
You know, after I got to know him, then he just kind of trailed me everywhere I went. I mean, in Kalamazoo, he was always kind of there. And then I got the gig in Indiana working for Papa John's. And, of course, he's like, yeah. And I actually lived with Nick for a very short time. But, you know, he started, he'd have me to practice now and again. And then he would have money issues. So he would sell me musical equipment on the basis that I'd sell it back at any point if he wanted it. And then from there, we just, you know, really kind of hung out a lot. Mm-hmm. Especially once I lived in Indiana, he was coming over all the time. And I never had a girlfriend that liked him. You know, they were all just like, what do you do with that guy? And I'm like, I don't know. He's just a friend, you know. Yeah. That's pretty much what it is.
That's exactly my wife's take on that.
Yeah, that's a friend's job, is to not be liked by the girlfriend. Because if she does like you, that's might be a problem.
Long term.
Yeah, I remember, you know, not only the house you had in New Paris, but you had an apartment in Goshen.
Oh, yeah.
And
I was there about 5 years.
Oh my gosh! I
remember the house.
That's where Nick. That's where I lived with Nick. Yeah. He lived in that apartment for almost a year.
Yeah, that's right.
I think I was at that apartment once or twice.
Yeah, you might have been.
Yeah,
I just remember you frying up morels.
Oh man!
I could have brought that picture. I gave a copy of that to my parents, and they had it all framed up. And I meant to wear my Forearm Shiver shirt today too.
Oh,
the
right
one you designed.
This
said,
picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah, I have that framed up.
I'm like, I just remember, I need a story. Bobby, can I do a story? And you're like, yeah.
Were you the only one that actually knew what the hell was going on? Because I don't think me and Eric posed for the picture.
I kind of posed for that picture, too. But if you look at the t-shirt I'm wearing, it's a skull that evolves into a mushroom or vice versa.
And that has some otherworldly implications.
Yeah, and I picked that shirt just for that because I knew the whole thing was about fungus.
Indeed it was.
Yep.
I even changed your name, man. We agreed.
Yeah, Roberto Ramirez, I think, is what it says.
It does.
Yep. Now, that's how easily I have an alias.
I just lost my journalist card.
Yeah.
Oh man, but that was some good times. But you know, what about the music? Did you like or did you not?
You know, for the most part, I thought they were excellent. Love to see them out live. Never really got to see as many shows as I wish I could have, but I always enjoyed the ones I did.
Mm-hmm.
He was at the one or two of the Rainbow Farm ones.
Oh yeah, was
that? He sent me some pictures.
At least a couple of the Rainbow. In fact, I got a clubhouse back in my town now. Where I host dudes on Wednesday night, it's guys' night out, and I got a picture of me and Nick standing next to one of his old Toyotas, and I'm eating corn and holding the Budweiser, and he's just sitting at a chair looking stupid at me.
Wow!
And that was backstage at the.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it was up on the hill.
And
I had traded a bottle of water for that corn because I brought bottles of water to trade off, and some hippie chick was like, "I'll trade you." It was really good corn, too. That's one of the things I miss about this area is the freaking corn. Oh, my God, in the summertime. The corn here is so damn good. Michigan corn is good, too, but this town had a beat.
Right on, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Damn.
So, I know at some point you told me recently that you still own the, I don't remember what kind it was, but the red bass that was all sanded down.
Yeah, Red Thunder.
The Red Thunder, yeah.
Yep, I do still have that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And he wishes, and as well as I do wish, that one of us had that fucking Rickenbacker that I think he sold to Dave Vogel for like, I think he told me he got $400 out. I was like, I wanted to kill him. I was like, dude.
Yeah. I should have never sold it back to him, and I knew that. I should have lied and said I'd sold it to someone else, because that was a beautiful guitar.
That was a badass guitar.
And you just don't see those come across
the market. Well, you don't, and the fucking price has gone through the roof, because I'm like, I'm not even a bass player, but I kind of want one just to have one, because they're badass.
Yeah, right?
You know?
Never see it again.
I remember when he got that.
Yep.
That is crazy.
Where did he get it from? I don't think I know.
No, I don't know either.
And I remember when you helped him out.
Yeah, I bought
three or four basses off of him and a drum kit, and he still owes me money for the drum kit.
I think, yeah, you're going to have to get in line for that shit. Because
I didn't expect I'd ever see it. But if I could get the drum kit back, I'd be happy with that, too.
So Roberto Ramirez is offering a bounty.
A bounty.
On Nicholson.
A Nick bounty.
Cali. So, yeah, I mean, you played.
Did you play before you met Nick? Or
no,
was that
I never really had any musical talent. I did drums in seventh grade, and I had a dick for a teacher, so I hung it up right away. But then after he started selling me guitars, I just started fiddling with them. And I picked up a few things. I still can't read music or anything, but I can play a few punk rock tunes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who did you go see recently? I was walking in and out of the room.
I was at the Circle Jerks just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
With Negative Approach. 7 Seconds got COVID-ed out.
Happens to the best of us.
So yeah, I still have two Nick basses, that Red Thunder, and then he sold me a Fender Jazz bass too. It was really nice.
Oh, was that... I wonder if that's the one Andy used.
Might be.
Was it in... How recent?
Natural wood look to it?
No, maybe not.
Yeah, it all would have been the same time frame, 25 years ago or so.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we did the Shockproof reunion like 6 years ago now. So he had... So I don't know if you're aware of the story, and we kind of went over it, so I'll kind of give you the high points. But like we were talking before we started recording, he came out of nowhere, as he does, and was very interested in doing the Shockproof reunion and offered to bankroll a recording. And at the time, Andy Edelman was our bass player, but Andy didn't have a bass rig. Why do I always fucking call Ron Nick and Nick Ron? Anyways, Ron was in a band where he was just playing acoustic. So he didn't even have an electric guitar or an amp. And Nick went out, bought them gear, bought a PA, which he sold me the PA for a fraction of what he paid for it, and then paid for all the recording. And we went in and banged out like 17 tracks in a day. So I don't know if you have a copy of that. If you don't, I have one in the car.
I do not.
Or if you're even interested.
I would definitely take a copy.
And it's only $17.99.
Actually, we put something on the back because Nick was like, he wanted to give them away, and it says, do not pay anything for this, or something to that effect on the back of it.
Yeah, very cool.
That sounds like Nick.
But the reason I thought that might be one of those bases is because he had sold all that shit. Actually, I think he sold me the amp. He bought an amp for me to let Ron use, then sold it back to me, and then I sold it to Ron.
Yeah, I got,
took the middleman out.
I got three amps from Nick, too. I got the old Nemesis, that Eden Nemesis.
Oh, that thing's badass.
It is badass.
Dude.
In fact, I sing with a band, and they practice at my place, and the bassist loves that thing. He's like,
oh, man.
I
love
like,
that.
The sound that comes out of that is amazing, and I'm like, yes, yes, it is. when he had it, all the speakers were blown.
Oh, yeah.
And so he said to me, he's like, I know the dude who can order the speakers, and if you pay for them and have them shipped here, that amp is yours. And I was like, okay. So I ordered the speakers. Nick installed them. It worked great, and I own that amp after that. So, and then nice. he also sold me the toaster. You remember the toaster? That it was a I'm not going to remember to think of the name of it. It's an old-ass tube amp. And then I got a Marshall amp off of him as well, kind of mid-range as far as decency. That Nemesis is definitely the one.
Oh, not, yeah, they made some good stuff. They got bought out by Washburn, and now they're crap, but the original Nemesis was, Eden was really, because he had two of those. He bought, like, a combo, and then he had, like, the amp with the head, and they both fucking sounded amazing. But...
Oh, yeah, he sold me a random head, too, for a PA at one point, which I'm still using, but it needs repair right now. In fact, that Eden amp just got repaired as well.
That's
20 years later.
20 years later, yeah.
Breaks
shit
down.
What band are you singing with?
Some friends of mine are in a band called The Sessions. They do, really obscure oldies from, you know, whatever artists they want to do. They're a little bit older than I am, so they're really focused on late 60s, early 70s stuff. You know, Todd Rundgren and Bread, and they love the Beatles, but they don't do a lot of them. But, you know, they throw out some really strange songs. So it's a fun night out at the bar for dancing, but everybody goes home going, I don't know one of those songs.
Nice. Because they were obscure from back then.
Yeah, it was like they'll do all the B-side stuff that the bigger artists had. And
so true fans would know.
Yeah, so true fans will know.
And would appreciate the band. Yeah.
People who are into music will know exactly where it's coming
from. Yeah, do you play out with them at all?
Oh, yeah. We're playing Saturday at the Sandbar in Saugatuck.
Oh, that's not that. Yeah, that's awesome.
Come on up if you want. So music starts at 9. We play till about 1:30.
Wow, that's cool.
The Sandbar.
I sing.
Let me check my calendar.
Yeah, check your calendar. I sing a number of tunes with them. I do an Iggy Pop song, and I do
Iggy Pop.
Yeah, I do Summer in the City, and I sing a Police song with them, and I sing Dragging the Line we do, and I'm trying to get them to work more of my material in, but the deal was they needed a place to rehearse, and I have a building, and so they wanted to borrow my space because I carved out a man cave in it years ago, And they're like, what would that cost? And I said, if you just let me sing a few songs, it'd be no charge.
Mm-hmm.
So they practice once a week. They're very good about being there once a week. And then if I'm not too busy working, I get in and I do a couple of tunes with them. And then, yeah, we play out. We've been playing out a lot lately. This will be our third Sandbar gig in about 6 weeks.
Oh, wow. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Yeah. It's fun.
Right on.
Mm-hmm.
That's a blast.
Yeah. Rick, who's our bassist, he's really good. He does, he's doing a thing right now. Monday night is jazz night at the Whatnot Inn. And they have their own band. That's in Fenville. And it's open mic. So even though there's three dudes, a keyboard, Rick on bass, and a drummer, they'll play their stuff. But then there's a bunch of local people that'll come up and sing whatever jazz standards they want to do. And it doesn't have to be all jazz, some blues and whatever.
But the band plays with them. It's rock band karaoke.
Yeah,
not machine.
Yeah, you walk How's in cool. and you How tell cool them what you that? Want to play and they'll figure out how to do it. Yeah.
Okay, while we have you on and you know some experience about that world, I got Steve to help me out with one of our clients here. We started a festival the year of COVID. So we represent a local healthcare system that wanted to bring the healing power of music back to people. So before everything really opened up, there were small public engagements that you could go to as long as the crowds were under 200. So we did a concert with three different stages so the bands could be separated, and then we live streamed it, and we live streamed it to big Jumbotron trucks in parking lots so people could do a drive-in and see live music, right?
All right. Yeah, that makes
sense.
Well,
it was fantastic the first year because all the festivals had been canceled.
It was the only thing there was to do.
So last year when we did it again, we thought we'd expand it. We had two more live stages and a third home stage, but the weather rained out the two, and we didn't have as much live stream traffic. Well, why? Because music's opened again. So this year what we're going to do is we're going to announce that people all summer long can post selfie videos of themselves singing an uncut song and hashtag it accordingly so that we know that they're entering the contest. And
we'll
this
give
year,
the website and everything since you're going over.
I will. It'll be available soon, but the information's not out there yet. So next week.
Well, by the time this comes out, it'll be post-dated. This is
heartbeatmusicfest.org, I think. And this year, we're going to say...
What's your hashtag? Come on, man. I'm trying to help you now.
You're the marketing guy. How the hell am I telling you?
We're still developing that, Steve. But we'll have Lalo Cura, so nice jazz fusion, Spanish Latino.
They're amazing.
And then Julia James locally. She's a
singer-songwriter.
Really good singer-songwriter.
I've never seen her, but I've heard good things.
And we'll end with a lady called, whose name is Janet Norris, and she sings soul, I mean, like craziness. But in the middle, Lalo Cura will be the backup band for the five top singers who all summer long will be able to monitor those things, those videos of people, and we'll pick five people to actually join the concert. And each of those five people will be able to sing their song live band or live rock band karaoke style. Sweet. But is that really, I mean, does the crowd like that live rock band karaoke music? Or
that thing I'm talking about on Monday nights?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they get a good crowd, but it's older, for sure, older people. Sure. But yeah, it's actually one of the best music scenes really to kind of hang out at, because there's no entrance fee. The food is really decent at that place. Service is great. And it's such a small room that the band is basically just sitting amongst the tables, you know? So you're just, you're sitting right there having dinner with the band. So
everybody's enjoying it.
Yeah, everybody loves it. And there's even a little dance floor that sometimes gets some action. And they have some, it's mostly female vocalists that show up, but I mean, they have some monster voices that show up.
Isn't that crazy?
They're so good.
You know, we're 20 years into American Idol, and I don't know how America's Got Talent. There was a local band, the threesome. I got to be
girl
careful.
Named Tom.
Yes, yeah. Siblings. Can't. You got to be careful about using the word threesome.
Yeah.
Nobody would have even thought anything of that if it just went. You just let it go.
But there's a lot of talent that people just let sit on the shelf and don't get out there. So that's cool that you're a part of something or a part of a band that gets more people playing.
That's the idea. Yeah, the guys that I sing with, they'll open it up to anyone that wants to give it a shot. I mean, they don't necessarily know everything. Well, Rick does. Rick the bass, he can play anything.
Uh-huh.
And Bob the drummer, they've been a team for a long time. In fact, our band has three Bobs, so we all have stage names as a result.
What's your stage name?
My name is Skip College.
Nice. Cheers to yep. Skip College.
Ainsley Sessions is a guitarist, and he's kind of the main drive of the band. Rick is Dick Saginaw, because he's from Saginaw. And then Bob the drummer is Miles Long. That's his name. Yeah,
very nice. And yeah, the three Bobs.
Together we are the Sessions.
Yeah, it seems appropriate.
Yep.
That's excellent.
Very nice. So on that topic a little bit, so I play in a local cover band on, you know, occasion that we get these, I won't say which college, but we get these college gigs, and we have the exact opposite experience as what you may have or they may have with people coming up and wanting to sing, because it's usually shit-faced.
Oh.
Teenagers,
yeah,
and it's who shouldn't be singing at all. You're like, and we've got some very friendly bandmates that will just invite them on up, and I'll be like, God damn it, dude, stop doing that. We look like fucking ass clowns.
Yeah, there is a time and a place for all of that.
Exactly. Well, but I imagine what you're talking about, it's like, you know, people that actually practice and do.
Yeah, and that's, like, Monday is their thing, you know, that's their night to go out and strut their little bit of stuff, and that's what they get, so.
Well, if getting back into the Forearm Shiver Rainbow Fest thing, so the story, Bob, is about how these guys got together and really stroked out some good music for a little while, and next thing you know, they weren't there, you know, and kind of the culmination of the band was before things just started to disintegrate was, you know, playing at Rainbow Farm, right? So
yeah, kind of, so we're trying to create an arc here.
Yeah, well, we
and, yeah, we that was our climax pretty much.
Steve was able to get the new guy that's in charge of Rainbow Farm to come by.
Oh, really?
And
yeah, they're starting to do stuff again, or they have been. And I think the first episode we were talking about, you know, what the story was going to be and whatnot, because a lot of people forget what happened there, and I lost my train of thought.
Well, no. Because it happened, and then a week later, 9/11
happened, yeah.
And so nobody talked about the tragedy, but we were able to, Joe.
Yeah, well, and I remember what I was saying, like, initially I'd seen people start doing Rainbow Farm stuff, and I'm like, that fucking better be somebody that's connected to, like, back in the day, instead of people trying to
capitalize
on the name. And come to find out, the guy actually did work there back in the day and knew Tom and Raleigh very well. And so, yeah, so it turned out well. I had to apologize to him on air. To be like, sorry, I already talked shit, but yeah. I come to find out you're the real deal.
That would be good if he could get it going again, because that was such a great venue, man.
Yeah. They're working on putting all the tracks back together, because I guess what happened after the whole, you know, shootout thing, and they carved it up. And Joe told a story about how they
put a clause
where they couldn't be
associated
with Rainbow Farm. But if you resold it, then you could. So they're in the process of overcoming that obstacle.
Oh, I see. That seems
so, but
weird.
They haven't got all the tracks back. So it's not the same, like you think of the bowl where, you know. It's still there, right. But I don't know if he said they don't own that part yet. So it's a different location, but yeah. They're still doing shows, so
yeah they're actually, they got Michael Winslow coming out and
Police Academy, the guy who makes the noises,
and Gucci
Berry, who I still have no fucking idea who it is.
I don't know who that is either. Michael Winslow came to Holland not long back, but his show got canceled because of COVID.
Oh wow, very yep. Cool, interesting. Well, they got some big plans, including ICP, maybe.
Oh, you weren't supposed to say
that. I just said initials.
Okay, yeah.
That might not mean anything to
some people. Yeah. Might mean a lot. If he calls me, I'm sending him to you, fucker.
This won't be on for a while, right? He's probably already announced it.
Won't be on for a while, and nobody even knows what a juggalo is, so it's all good.
Damn it.
but with that being said, man, we had a blast at the farm and the hippie slide and watching these guys, you know, play. Was there like a song or two that you recall that stands out to, like, you really enjoyed it?
My favorite was always Rotten Sea Monkeys. It was the heaviest, it was the quickest, it really had the most thrash character to it of the stuff you guys did, so that was my go-to.
That was pretty early on. That's a good pick.
It was.
And it was that's a great one, because people telling us lies all the time.
And I think I may have outed myself on a previous episode, but if I didn't, I'm going to now.
It's okay. We accept all kinds here.
I know. Fucking asshole. You just interrupt my flow, man. Oh, shit. No, so Urge Overkill, you remember those guys at all?
Mm-hmm.
That riff, unknowingly at the time, may or may not be Sister Havana. Yeah, it's real fucking close. I didn't do it on purpose, obviously. I would never steal on purpose.
Well, you know, it happens in music.
I mean, good artists borrow, great artists steal.
There's only so many varieties you can put out there, so...
Yeah, no, that was a good one, and that was one that you guys recorded at Tony Bayless's.
That was Cherry Street, yeah.
Cherry Street Studio,
the Quiet Riot production.
It was a old 1910 house in the basement, and
it definitely. They're still going.
Yeah.
I don't know if they still call it Cherry Street, but I mean, they have updated, and it's state-of-the-art stuff.
That's crazy. So, cheers to you, Tony Bayless.
Yes. And Pat Bayless, his brother, who's a drummer in a band called In Crimson. They're pretty good.
Very cool.
Buddies with those guys.
Very cool. Any crazy Nick story that you could share?
I could tell you a crazy forearm shiver story. I saw them one night at a house party. I don't remember where it was. It was somewhere around the dirty outskirts of Elkhart, but
as it were,
there was one really loaded dude right at the end of the set who was just demanding a drum solo, and he was so hammered he was willing to fight anybody, including dudes in the band.
Was his name Bobby J?
To get his drum solo. No, it was not me. But I just remember that we all got the hell out of there when we're relieved when nothing went down, because this dude was just big and drunk.
I remember so many shows like that. Like that, I mean, nothing is out of the realm of possibilities, but I don't remember that specifically. But yeah,
I can see that going definitely happened. One or two ways. Either Eric saying, no, let's get the hell out of here, or hell yeah, I'll give him what he wants.
Yeah,
but he wasn't one to hit the drums too hard, so
this is true.
I'm friends with a guy who's in a band, and he's kind of on the same lines, where he just doesn't really want to damage the equipment kind of thing. And they do the Cretan Hot by the Ramones, and he's just sitting up there tapping it out, and I'm like, dude, it's Ramones. Get them fucking toms.
Kill it.
Hit them now.
I remember we got offered one or two times, we got to do Cheers Open Jam, which, I mean, everybody knows what Open Jam is, so the hardest thing about that, and I guess the biggest benefit about that, was we got paid $300, and we're like, that's huge for a band that makes no fucking money to pay for studio time and whatnot. So we had the hardest time talking Eric into it, because he's like, if somebody breaks my fucking cymbals, we're paying for it. I'm like, and we're all like, please don't break a cymbal, because that just kills the $300 right there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was not fucking having it, like, to the point where we almost didn't do it, because he was like that anal about his drums.
I remember Nick telling me at one time when he let someone use his kit, and it was a big black guy, and he broke at least two of his cymbals.
Oh. I think that was it. That was at Cheers, because yeah, it did happen. Yeah, like, we did it once or twice.
It out and just busted it up, and Eric was pissed.
Mm-hmm.
But...
well, when it's not your equipment, you can let it go, man.
That's the dice you roll, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, I resembled one of those college kids at one of your cheer shows one time, and I don't remember if it's the one where you peeked your head in and Ron was playing, or if it was one that you were there. But I had driven out there and joined you guys, and I found another way home so that I could make it safely.
So let's do this real quick. Since Ron was on last week, I want to read these things from the breakup, and Bobby J can maybe shed some light if he remembers any of this at all. Or
can... oh, you brought a pick.
Yeah. I got more of those. That one's for him. So I don't remember which one of these is first.
Nice.
That was Nick's choice of colors, because it had to be like pimp, like, you know, purple picks with gold lettering. Mm-hmm. All right, let me see. All right, so I don't remember which one came first. I think it was maybe Nick's, but anyways. So in the pages of Liquid Magazine, and the only reference point we have is April 1999. One clearly came after the other, but. I'll start with Nick's, because we talked about this with Ron last week. We got to kind of put a period on it. But, so, from the pages of Liquid Magazine. Forum Shiver speaks out, and this is Nick writing. To all those who think they know more than they really do, and to all the Forum Shiver, Shiver fans, to set the record straight for the last time, to all those who are ignorant to our situation and think they know the truth, here it is, point blank. Steve's assignment as guitar player for FS has been canceled due to lack of energy, creativity, and just plain power. Oh, he knew how to stick it in and break it off, didn't he? He has been replaced by Forum Shiver original guitar player, R. Bailey Jr. We decided between the pros and cons of replacing him, and, well, to be frank, we couldn't find any cons, so it was bye-bye for Bonzo. We've heard a lot of different speculations for this situation and have decided to set the record straight for ourselves. To the dumbass who said we couldn't kick him out because he was the founding member and that he wrote all the songs, nothing could be further from the truth. He was not the first guitar player and wrote very little, if any. The drums and bass have always been the driving force in this band, and now we have the guitar player that we wanted in the first place. Thank you to all our fans. Thank you, Liquid Magazine and Bill Finn, for all the work you're doing to the local scene. Any questions, reply to some email that probably doesn't exist anymore. And then editors reply, hey guys, I'm really sorry to hear about Steve. I thought you guys already had a heavy sound, but what do I know? I guess the next step is total brutality. I can't wait. And then he inserts a Beatle lyric. So this must have been first, because I remember replying to that part.
Bye-bye for Bonzo.
And mine's much more verbose. I apologize, because this might take a minute, but we'll get it out of the way, since I meant to have this with Ron last week, so he could kind of give us his...
Segment 9.
Yeah.
It'll have to be segment nine.
Okay. So, to whom it may concern, and there's a nice little picture from... I don't know if you remember that or not.
I remember that coat.
And it's a little cartoon thing that my buddy drew that says, hey, Nick, is that a knife in my back, or are you just happy to see me? And he actually printed that. I sent that as a joke, and he put it in here. Anyways, I would like to set the record straight on the whole forearm shiver breakup situation. I have no one to prove anything to, since I'm the odd man out, and I have no need to save face, so you can be sure what you're about to read is true and not the delusional ramblings of an egotistical asshole like the letter in last month's issue of... Okay, so we got him straight in chronological order. What really happened was this. Eric, the drummer, and I had gotten into a fight about a few things that shouldn't have been said about his girlfriend. Eric had told Nick that he didn't want to play with me anymore unless I apologized. Nick took this and ran with it and used Eric as a scapegoat after I had already apologized to Eric and his girlfriend. As to why Nick wanted me out of the band, I don't know. I think it was so he could have his old buddy Ron back in the band, who he had been playing with for a year previously when he, being the hypocrite that he is, bitched at me for jamming with other people. Just a sample of the hypocrisy of Nick Nicholson. It fucking goes on from here. I mean, there's like, it's bad. And I think there was a rebuttal, but I have no fucking idea where it was. But I've tried to remain professional about this whole thing and not stoop to other people's levels. I wrote the following letter immediately after reading the bullshit written about me, and with a lot of anger. I've since rewritten it and taken a few things out that probably shouldn't have been said. So keep in mind that I'm keeping it as civil as possible and saying the things I've previously written. Here goes. I did not wish this to be a mudslinging contest, but if this is the way it's going to go, then I'm not going to sit back and take it. I know that Nick didn't represent the rest of Forum Shiver when he wrote the little proclamation. Right words that you can speak. So this is more directed to him and his backstabbing tactics, see photo, than the rest of Forum Shiver. Anyone who knew the band and read the letter knew it was all a bunch of Nick's bullshit and didn't believe a word. So nice try, Nick. Also, anyone who had anything to do with that band knew I did virtually everything for them. Club bookings, studio bookings, promo packs, phone calls, mailing, blah, 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 ad nauseum. So the most common response I get is, they fired you? I just have to laugh when I think of the amount they'll get done without me, considering the motivational level. In response to the lack of creativity or enthusiasm on my part, yes, there probably was towards the end, partly because of the lame material being brought to the table. And this is just fucking snipe city, man.
Yeah. Run with it. Run with it.
Do it, man. Do it. Partly because of the lame material being brought to the table by the band's self-proclaimed sole songwriter. Also in part to the new technical direction the drummer and I were trying that Nick couldn't quite grasp or play.
Oh.
Damn, it's fucking harsh, man. And to think we made up after this. But anyways. And as for writing the majority of the material, no, I probably didn't. But I've always been more quality than quantity, unlike Mr. Songwriter. Jesus Christ. This is just venomous, dude.
I know, but it's so much fun when you just sit back and put together burns. You know?
Yeah. The funny part is, I was always told that the material I wrote had a lot to do with were better songs, but people had no idea who wrote what. I remember all of our tapes and CDs reading all songs written by Forum Shiver, but I'm not the one splitting hairs. I'm not the egomaniac Nick is, and I won't take credit for songs that I didn't write. But you can be sure I will be taking the material I had a part in and play it with my new project, no matter if it is considered Forum Shiver's. I was part of Forum Shiver and an original member, and I will play the songs we wrote. Which, that never happened, so whatever. I always thought Forum Shiver was made up of three friends making music and having fun, but judging by the knife in my back, see photo again. I didn't put that in. I must have been sadly mistaken. It always seemed that we had that something special that you needed to make it. There was definitely some magic. I just hope they didn't think they can recapture that by adding a member that was insufficient in the first place.
Oh,
so I'm kind of glad I didn't have this with Ron here because
last week.
Sorry, Ron, but
glad you didn't come back, buddy.
Sorry, buddy.
Even if you're going to bring some brew.
Yeah, so this is going down. I apologize, but in the spirit of, what do you want to say? Honesty.
Well, and, you know, 2 decades ago.
2 decades, yeah, so it can't hurt that much. Plus. So, where was I here?
High school.
Insufficient. Yeah, exactly. It's high school shit. Insufficient in the first. Speaking of that, anyone who has the Forearm Shiver 3 CD, take a look at the liner notes in very tiny print that starts, P.S. Thanks to RBJ. Anyone who doesn't have the disc, let me reprint it word for word. P.S. Thanks to RBJ for 1 riff, 8 insignificant measures, 1 come close to gleam in the spotlight but tarnished the thing all by yourself, an eyesore that left bitter taste in our eyes and the weakest point in the hole, and left us wondering why we never changed it. Maybe a small tribute to you, the ever-expanding ego of psycho-depression and rage, and the hate of phony and cheddar, so much one hath himself... One hath himself become that of which spawns one owns one's own hate.
You know you're pissed when you start speaking King James.
Yeah, when you go all fucking... When you go Shakespeare on his ass, you're mad. It wasn't that good, Manic Man, so... That was the excerpt. So
when you said weakest part in the hole, is that spelled W-H-O-L-E?
Just H-O-L-E.
It's probably H-O-L-E, but he misspelled it. So this is directed at their old new guitar player that was written by none other than his good buddy Nick. Nobody else in the band had anything to do with that, and that is true. Like, I didn't have anything against Ron. I did giggle at the wording because it was... funny, and some of it was true, but since my ability as a guitar player has been attacked, I have to tell everybody that I can't even begin to count how many times I've heard, you guys would be great if you got rid of that singer, or the music's there, but that singer sucks. And you were around enough to hear that, but I'm not splitting. Now, I'm not going to bite on Nick's singing ability because I would only be biting on myself for sticking with him for so long, a quality that he never possessed. It's really funny how things turned out, considering how many times Nick has come real close to being kicked out himself for being fucked up on drugs or being in rehab. Yeah, Nick, I know how cool you think that is, but nobody else did. I only wish I had taken advantage of just one of those situations and gotten rid of the weak link in the chain and turned the band into what it deserved to be, but doesn't have an Ice Cube's chance in hell of being now. Hindsight is always 20/20. Just on a personal note, Eric, I still consider you a great friend. Please save yourself the embarrassment of playing with substandard musicians.
Oh, my gosh. Dude,
I held back nothing.
Man.
So that was the end of that. Yeah, that was a bit long.
Who wrote the Satanic Bible?
Anton LaVey.
Yeah, because he says when you get slapped on the cheek, you don't turn your other cheek. You slap back like 10 times.
Yeah. That was a couple slaps.
And yet, at some point, you guys got back together again.
Yeah, actually. And, it wasn't too long after that.
Yeah.
Because I had, and I don't think this was like an ulterior motive, although it could have been, but I had all the ADAT tapes for the album that never got released that we were in the middle of recording when all the shit went down.
Hofirth.
Yeah, the Forearm Shiver 4, which is out, but... on Bandcamp or SoundCloud somewhere. Yeah,
you know, it's what I enjoy about this is, you know, guys can get in a fight, pick each other up, dust each other off, and walk away.
Dude, I've told my wife this exact same thing. Yeah. I'm like, girls will get in an argument and not talk for 20 years. You whip a guy's ass or he whips your ass, you guys you shake hands and go have a fucking beer. Like, right, it's on. Over.
Yeah. Mutual respect.
Yeah.
And it was. Out. I mean, that was, I mean, yeah. Obviously, and what's funny is when I was talking before about, you know, when we were in Shockproof Reality, we didn't get along. Like, me and Nick went on to become better friends than anybody in that band was, you know, oddly enough.
Dude, I completely get it. I didn't like him at first either. I'm like, what the hell? But then...
Neither did Bobby J.
Nobody did. And then you end up living with him or...
Yeah.
He's testing you to see if he likes you.
All the time.
It's just one of those things.
My gosh. You know?
Some people are like that.
I can't believe I didn't get divorced all running around with Nick all that time.
She had the papers in her back pocket the entire time. Yeah. She's like, one more fucking thing, dude.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, was... and you want to bring him back into the fold.
Yeah, hey, Nick. Hey, where are you? Yeah. Come on, let's go get a drink.
Right, thanks for... Yeah. Thanks.
We're going to have to record
more fun with you.
I tell you what, you know, something I don't know, you know, we don't talk about a lot, but I always kept a baseball glove and a softball and a baseball in the
car. Oh, that was the forearm shiver thing. Like, yeah. We would do that at, like, we'd,
yeah,
in break on fucking rehearsal, we'd all have the baseball glove.
And just out of the blue, yep. Hey, let's just play some catch.
Yep.
And, you know, not a lot of people would think about that, you know, and that's I think that's a real cool little side story, you know.
Yeah.
Let's go to the batting cages. And you, when you think about young guys in their 20s or early 20s who are playing music and trying to get laid and getting wasted, you don't think about them going to the batting cage or playing catch.
Yeah.
And that was...
That's one of the most wholesome stories I've ever heard.
Yeah.
We did do that, though.
At the end of my friendship with Nick, not that it's over, but since I seen him last, I just couldn't talk him into throwing the ball anymore.
Really?
Yeah, he
really
complained about shoulder pain, and I was just like, yeah, dude, you're like 33.
Yeah. Quit with the marathon masturbation sessions and your shoulder will heal.
That was the deal. That was the deal. He was looking at midget porn.
Yep. Injury. Got that Tommy John surgery.
He's got his little problem with the rotator cuff.
Anyways, did print out a whole bunch of that thing. Bestiality porn on my printer at one point. I was just like, why, dude?
Because it was your printer.
Yeah. Yeah. In your search history.
Oh, my God.
No, there was fucking forum shiver flyers that were all like these collage things with just rubber cemented cutouts of just random shit, and I'm sure there's some bestiality in there somewhere.
Yeah, blacked out eyes.
Yep.
Yeah, blacked out eyes. Yeah.
I have the actual original one that we printed off of, so it's still got all the shit. Like,
very stinking cool. You have to turn that into an NFT.
An NFT, yeah.
And sell that bitch.
RUNNOFT.
Yeah.
Well, man.
Well, I will say back when I was living with Nick, he was definitely, the band thing was a very emotional roller coaster, because I remember him just having the period about it all the time.
As far as what?
Just as far as whether he was friends with you or he wasn't, you know, the back and forth, loving it, hating it sort of thing. It was just really, it was kind of over the top for what it was, because it's like...
Well, and I think you had said, maybe it was you, but there was somebody who was like, yeah, you guys got like this love-hate thing going on. And I'm like, I kind of react to how I'm being treated, so it's not...
Yeah, but, you know, not to get all psychological, but old boy who was so... so could offend people, looked for ways to push buttons.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But you know, and quick to judge others on their music or their writing ability, or there was, I think that stemmed from a little bit of self-doubt.
Oh, it absolutely, you know what did. I mean? Because I talked to him after the fact about, like, dude, why the fuck didn't you continue on after, like, I was after Forearm Shiver, I was playing in that cover band that was pissing Nick off, and I played with them up till, like, I think we had a gig, like the millennial gig, 99 to 2000 New Year's Eve, and that was it for that band. And I went back to college and I didn't play in a fucking band for like 2 years. But when we got to talking again, I asked him, I was like, you know, I mean, I knew why I wasn't playing, but I was like, why the fuck didn't you continue on? And he said he found a group of guys up at Kalamazoo, and they wanted to do covers, and that wasn't Nick's thing, and it wasn't within his, and this isn't talking shit, but it wasn't within his wheelhouse of bass skills to do something like that,
right?
You know, and he's like, I just couldn't find anybody to play with after that. And I think that's why he was so gung-ho at the time when we did the Shockproof stuff, because he was like, this was the last thing, you know, well, like for, he felt fit into.
For his technical lack of singing ability and for his lack of skill on a bass, the guy knew how to arrange like crazy.
Well,
like,
I mean, even the lack of technical ability, it was part of the sound. It wasn't a bad thing.
No, it wasn't.
Because it was, you had like me and Eric that came from a little more schooled background, like form fitting to him, because the guy could write a fucking song. There was no doubt about that. So we were like, you deal with what you deal with, and that's not a
the way bite. He arranged. You know, Bobby, you were talking about this. These guys you play with, they play old music, right? It was Nick's idea to do a fast version of He Stopped Loving Her Today, right? So we tried that out, mm-hmm. and that was okay. But it wasn't half as good as when you guys did Running Bear.
Dude, we...
That running... Seriously? That was killer sound, man.
Don't let me forget to give you that disc, because we re-recorded that. But, I'll be talking with my wife and I'll be like, oh, Forearm Shiver, we did so many covers that never got recorded. Like I told you, I don't know if you remember this or not, but we got a call on like a Thursday and City Limits or Twist and Shout, whatever the fuck it was at the time, that place, the back of Parkmore Plaza, they would always have a band on Thursday night.
Twist and Pukes.
Yeah, well, you lived by the fucking, yeah. It was within stumbling distance of your house at one point.
It was very well placed.
So we had got like a short-term phone call, and they were like, hey, are you guys doing anything tonight? And I think they paid, and we made some good money because we played for 3 fucking hours, and we were like, man, we got to pull out everything we've ever written and everything we've ever played.
To fill that kind of time.
And I found the set list from those nights because I was like, what the fuck is this? This is like fucking 40 songs.
And actually, Nick's voice that night was on point.
Well, and I think probably because he never had any technical aspects as far as like warming up, so singing that long, he was probably warmed up like a motherfucker so he could do more than he thought he could.
That was a really good night. You guys, like, it was crazy that you guys played that long
and people liked it
and people were digging it. Yeah.
Man, I'm trying to remember when we did The Rose. We actually recorded The Rose by Bette Midler. We did Bonzo Goes to Bitburg. Like,
I remember. I remember Nick playing that one on the bass a lot.
That one, I think I sang that. Actually, we did. Man, we did. We were doing. We were trying to do an arrangement of Bernadette by the Temptations. I wish I had a fucking recording of that because I was doing like octaves for the horn.
And the music guy, he was an older guy, long gray hair.
Who's that?
That did the music, the mixing for you guys that night. And he was actually the guy from...
Oh, it was Jens.
Yeah.
From Cheers, yeah.
From Cheers, yeah.
Yeah, he was the fucking...
And we couldn't remember if he got that recorded, if he put any...
Oh, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that's lost to...
Oh my God, the fucking... yes. Like anybody would care about that shit now other than you.
For as much... yeah, exactly. For as much
Bobby,
as we
that
talk
was a
shit...
joke.
I'm catching up to it.
I'm getting there. For as much as we talked to shit about cover bands, like we did, that band did a lot of fucking covers. I couldn't remember all of them, like the fact that I remember 3 or 4 of them. Like,
What percentage of the material would you say Nick wrote versus you? Because pretty much it was just you and him writing.
Well, actually, I mean, Eric...
Eric wrote Rotten Sea Monkeys, actually, your favorite.
He wrote the vocals to that. But yeah, he would write a lot of vocals, and he would have a guitar idea every now and then. But I would say it was probably 20% to 80%, you know. And when I say that, I say, well, I guess if you kind of judge it by... Nick was always quicker to the draw on... vocal melodies, and that was one of the things that gave that band that sound. It was because it was a friendly competition, but it was a competition nonetheless to, like, if we had a piece of music to come up with whatever the vocal line was, and that was how you got like the interweaving of different people singing on the same song. But more to your point, as far as like, I mean, if we think about like musical ideas, like I come up with a riff and then everybody throws in on it, and then it comes out the other side. Like, it was probably half and half, but as far as... I came in maybe once or twice with, like, a full song. He would come in with full songs constantly, because that was just who he was, you know. I never wrote a lot of vocal melodies, so I couldn't be, you know, claim to be the songwriter. But as far as, like, musical ideas, it was pretty much half and half. And, I mean, Eric was in on that, too, for sure.
Okay. Because I never really knew. He never really talked about it, so.
Yeah, I mean, the whole shit talking back and forth about, like, who wrote what, I'm like, dude, we always did, and it's probably in this fucking cassette tape right here. We never did, like, song credits. Yeah, it doesn't say. But, yeah, it always said all songs by Forum Shiver, because you kind of threw what you had in the meat grinder on this end, and it came out the other end with all the seasoning of all three members, so you couldn't say, well, I wrote that song. You know, even when Nick would come in with a full song, it would never come out the end, other end, as he may have intended.
And
he was probably happy.
That goes back to, I mean, seriously, you guys were able, amid all the ego, there were times when you guys would put those egos aside, and the song was first, and...
The song was always first. There was really, like, when I said the whole thing about being friends and making music, dude, at that age, like, Nick had the wherewithal to go, we can do this.
Yeah.
And me and Eric were like, we're just fucking having fun, you know. But there
He was the gas pedal. There's no doubt about it.
At the end of the day, when all the shit slinging started, that's when the egos came out, because... You're challenging what my contribution was, so that fucking hurts my feelings, so I gotta defend that. But in the moment, I don't think there was, and I could be misremembering, which is where Nicholson needs to come out of the fucking woodwork, but I don't remember any type of, like, ego thing.
No, when you guys moved practice from Flying Ryan's basement to
the closet at Angie's. Or what were you gonna say?
Well, to John Wall's basement. Oh yeah,
stoking the flames of hell.
You were down there with the
fucking wood burning stove. Did you ever go there?
No, I didn't. But you guys, was you talking Angie's place behind the root beer stand?
Yeah, we used to, that little fucking room.
Oh my god.
Yeah, we fit barely.
Well, they got really close.
Yeah,
and we don't talk about those days.
Yeah.
There was no pants involved.
There wasn't room for pants.
Shoot. But it was true. I remember some of those songs would last for like 17 minutes.
You're just hammering out the riff.
Just going over, and there was just no stopping. You know, that was the most fun.
Well,
for me, actually, I just, it was like, holy cow, to be in that. And musicians know this. People who aren't musicians do not understand
the jam. Yeah.
And when the jam is happening and you're riding that wave, you don't even know that time exists.
Well, and that's, I mean, that the song is like fucking burst out of that moment, because it's like, maybe what if I do this? And then I do that, and he fucking followed me on it. Well, that's it. You know what I mean? Like, okay, we just wrote that part, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, I don't know how many songs came together like that. And I remember bringing, like, being on a fucking death metal kick or something, and bringing in a riff and going, I'm just fucking around with it over here. There's no way they're going to. Because that's what you do. Like, you go and you're like, oh, I'm just tuning up and throwing shit out to see if, hey, what's that?
Right.
See if somebody says it.
Right.
You know, and them going, I can't, what was it? It's the last song on the Green CD. I can't remember what the fuck. Mr. Cogburn. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what the fuck is that? And it came together that quick, you know. A lot of things did. But
gosh.
It was always fun to think of, like, and it wasn't like a conscious thing, but like, what can I throw out that they're not going to like? You know, because we could always fucking hammer something into something, you know. But as we discussed in previous episodes, like those early ones, They got discarded quickly because we were talking. We had a fuck. I don't know if you remember this or not. I didn't until I heard the fucking recording. But we had a song called "Toss My Salad," and I was like, "Why the fuck did we do that?" Other than to amuse ourselves, but we obviously played it to an audience at some point.
I remember people laughing at that song.
That wasn't what we were going for.
I know. I thought it was great. And it was that song that caused Olive Garden to stop asking people if they could toss their salad.
Exactly. No, it was the toss your salad.
Olive Garden is one of the last remaining buildings on Cassopolis that was still there when
right?
I was here.
I know,
it's
right?
It's like, nothing the same anymore.
Yeah, it's different, dude.
So I got a good Nick story. I got a couple. He went to a bar one night. Remember that big-ass Ford truck he used to drive forever? Yeah. He sold the bed off it at a bar one night for $100. And he just stayed at the bar and spent that $100 on drinks. That was it. And then he drove that truck around with no fucking bed on it for a couple years after that. And I figured he probably got a little bit better gas mileage.
Oh, shoot.
Oh, my God. And then when I lived in New Paris, there was a pond out back of my place. And one day we're standing out there with the wrist rocket and we're flinging gumballs out into the cornfield, and a pair of ducks lands in the pond, and he's like, shoot at those ducks. And I'm like, dude, they're 150 yards away. No way. He's like, I know, you'll never hit them, so go ahead and shoot at them. So sure enough,
he's the fucking devil on your shoulder.
Shot, I line up a shot, and it comes in like a curveball, and right off the back of that duck's fucking head. And I'm just like, somebody in the neighborhood is going to see that.
Oh my God.
But the duck lived, so it was all good.
Oh my God. That's hilarious.
Just a little confused for a little while.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's hilarious.
The influence of Nick Nicholson.
Don't let the geese hear that story. They'll shit more outside the door.
Yeah, what's going on out there?
I don't know. I don't know, but our maintenance chief is going to work on that. Nick had no influence whatsoever, though, when I did a photo for you that you turned into Christmas presents for your family. You had a snapping turtle.
Yeah, Deathlok's no longer with us, unfortunately.
That was the most interesting photo session that I've ever been hired to
do. I still have those originals that you took. Yeah.
So he's got this snapping turtle, Steve, and I'm got my camera dialed in, and I'm using lots of glass, which is a big lens, so that I got a thin focal plane. And he drops a white mouse in the water, and it swims around, and that turtle just slowly just starts to rise and snap.
Got him by the tail.
And
that was your Christmas card that
year? I did Christmas cards, and I did mouse pads. Because it was a picture.
It was a mouse.
A picture
no
of a
pun
turtle
intended.
With a mouse
in
his mouth by the tail. And the mouse is trying to swim. Of course, visuals right now are not helping. But, yeah, I still have one of those mouse pads.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, that was one of the most interesting
You should
things.
Open an Etsy shop once this comes out. Like, I think there'll be a demand for that shit.
We will make sure that image gets on the podcast website.
And I'll send the picture back to you.
All the dollars will go to Bobby J's favorite charity.
Oh, it's currently the Trevor Project.
Okay, the Trevor.
I'm actually in the middle of a walk for the Trevor Project.
Are you serious?
I'm walking 50 miles in the month of April for them.
What is the Trevor Project?
The Trevor Project is an association that funds emergency services for the LGBTQ nation, and when those people start to feel iffy and suicidal, they're there as a backup for them.
Cheers. So,
yep. Cheers.
Thanks.
Nice.
That's what I'm doing.
Right on. Oh, do you need another one?
There's no need.
Oh, I know.
But the want.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I get you.
So, yeah, both my kids are kind of doing their own thing as far as sexuality and awareness and who they are.
Both my kids.
Yeah, both.
How
my
old are
kids.
Your children?
I've got one going to Northern Michigan University, and I got another one going to Holland High School, who's a junior.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I had Brody and Carly at the time. But my oldest
what
married.
What the hell is that?
Brody's married. Is that the one with the fruit?
That's
the
orange,
beer
yeah.
with some, the fruit. It's nasty.
Is Brody tied orange. To this?
Yeah, he was actually out here. Brody, my son, is actually our normal podcast producer. And he does website edits and a little bit of videography editing. He's married, lives in South Bend now. My daughter, Carly, is in Valparaiso with her husband, who was a journeyman electrician. So she supported as he was an apprentice going through that. And I have a 16-year-old daughter at home. And I don't know how I have good kids. After all the trouble, I guess I didn't raise that as much hell as I thought I did.
You yeah, kept Nicholson away from them.
Yeah, right. They were lucky that he vanished. No bad influence. But Nick Nicholson was actually at my reception. He didn't come to my wedding because that was in Vegas, but he did come up for my reception.
Wow.
What year was this?
That would have been 03.
So, interesting story. This is another where Nicholson just like kind of appears out of fucking nowhere. Like, after not seeing him forever. And he was doing, like, drywall. This is 2005, 6. God, we gotta do something about these Tom Waits microphones. And he's doing, like, drywall in my basement or something. I'm paying him, you know, whatever. And
he was a good painter.
No, he was.
And a good drywall dude. Yeah, absolutely.
He really had some good skills.
So... this is right around the time planning a wedding. We get married, and he gets an invite. And literally, I think I talked to him the week before. He doesn't show up to the wedding, and I didn't see him for 9 fucking years. And then that was this shockproof reality thing where he just materialized again. So
He's going to show up again. Oh, and you know, we talked about my kids. A little bit about Bobby's kids and Dylan.
Yeah, he is in the Navy. I think him and Brody are the same age.
Yeah, they went to Jimtown High School.
Yeah, that's right.
Jimtown.
Together, yeah. Yes. Which is why I don't do math. I have an accounting company do my books. I'm just kidding, Jimtown people.
Yeah, I'm not. I hate Jimtown.
Yeah, well.
Bunch of, yeah. We won't get into that.
We
that's
don't have to.
Neither the time nor
we
the
don't
place.
Have to. Bobby's from. You grew up in Michigan, right? You were in Michigan.
Yeah, I was
from.
I was born in the UP, but I grew up in the Holland area, and then I lived in Kalamazoo for about 6 years while I went to Western and worked there for a while.
And then you ended up in Goshen,
and then
Indiana.
I went from Bilbo's in Kalamazoo. I got recruited into Papa John's.
Fucking
and
they love that pizza, dude.
They were opening stores, and then I got the. I started at Elkhart as an assistant, and I got the Goshen store 3 months later.
Is that place still around?
That store's still there.
Yeah,
I just drove by it today.
Crazy, man.
Oh, dude, that thing was a bankroll.
Yeah.
For the people that invested in that, there was very few stores that performed like it did. Because it covered such a nice area so easily. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I was always mad about how little money I made. And I actually did very well as a supervisor for them, but I literally made them millions of dollars out of that freaking little store.
So what do you think about the Papa John's corporate today? There's been a lot of shakeup in the last few years.
It was good that John Schnatter got out of there because he's a serious egomaniac for sure. And but my mom said she saw something that of all restaurants that are in operation, they are thinking of closing.
Wow.
In its entirety. I get it because, you know, they're not used to paying people $15 an hour. So having to jump up to that and manage it and still be profitable, it's just not easy, you know?
Didn't Shaq buy into that? Or
yeah, he was kind of their spokes dude for a while. I don't think he still got that gig, but... It was nice to not see John Schnatter do that after a while because it's like, dude, you got to go away.
Yeah.
I got to meet him.
I remember.
Yep.
I remember you getting to go to some event where you got to meet the Papa.
Yeah, well, it was their, they had a thing every year. It was their supervisors meeting, and it was always in Louisville.
And, thank you for pronouncing that correct.
One of the years we got to go down there.
You mean
there.
Louisville?
Yeah, that's the one, Louisville. Louisville. And, yeah, and we Louisville, got to go down Kentucky. When they just had opened the new Louisville Cardinals Stadium. And so we got to tour the whole stadium with our group, and we were hanging out with Wade Oney, who at that time was John Schnatter's right-hand man. He gave us actually his own little guided tour. And at the end, he's like, you guys are great. Let me buy you a drink. Well, as we'd been walking around, I was drinking a Jack on the Rocks. And we'd walk by a food bar, and I'm like, my drink needs some kind of something in it. So I picked up a piece of broccoli and just chucked it in there. So he's going around going, I'm buying you guys a drink. What do you have? What do you have? What do you have? And he got to me, and I'm like, Jack and broccoli? And everybody lost it. They thought that was the best thing. And then my boss, every year after when we went down there, Jack and Broccoli,
he would
make the waitresses in the Hyatt, the hotel bar of the Hyatt, he would make them go down in the kitchen and get broccoli. So
we think we found Jack our name Bobby for J. the episode 7 Bobby is the J. Jack and Broccoli.
Jack and broccoli.
Yep. You are the fungus among us. Roberto Ramirez.
One of my shining moments for sure.
Yeah, you have plenty of shining moments, man. You are a legend. Seriously, it's very cool that you were able to make the trip down here.
Look here, I brought you hats too.
Hats. Oh, snap.
Yeah,
he brought Bridge.
That's your business.
That's my business. Yep.
Very cool, man. Thank you.
Right on. Oh, I've got one for you. Then I'll send you some stuff.
Shirts too.
Shanks.
Oh my gosh.
Shanks and hats and shirts
and matchbooks.
Oh, man,
I got the matchbooks.
Oh yeah, matchbooks.
In fact, I'll take a minute to plug my secret punk rock smoking club.
Yeah, I was looking at this and I was like,
very cool.
This has got to be a few years old, right?
I actually, the club itself is. I just did up the matchbooks about a year ago, and the 800 number is actually my 800 number. It came with my business, so
that is excellent.
Yeah,
For people that don't know,
1988.
I've got a black matchbook with Secret Punk Rock Smoking Club and a no smoking sign on one side, the 800 number on the spine,
1-800-392-9866,
and then a clown wizard flipping you off, and the words Butthole Surfers.
Yeah, that's their second album cover.
Very
well. It's actually cool. That clown is on the back of that album.
Very cool.
And it matches a tattoo that's right up here on my
arm. Ah, right on.
There you go.
So when I went to Ferris, my first year of school, I only spent 1 year at Ferris because then I transferred to Western. I hung out with a couple of punk rock chicks in the dorm. One of them I dated, and the other one, actually, she wasn't in college. She was a high schooler, but she would come and hang out with us because we somehow knew her. But in the dorm, you had to hide the fact that you were smoking, you know, because that was verboten. So we did the towel under the door, and then as we would smoke in there, we would talk about having the secret punk rock smoking club.
Nice.
And
did you blow it into like
toilet paper rolls with a dryer sheet?
Somebody just made reference to that shit. There was a show we were watching, and my wife was like, "What is he talking about?" I was like, I don't even smoke that much, and I know what the fuck that is.
That's how you hide the smell.
I don't smoke at all, but...
Yeah. That's crazy.
Anyways, sorry.
What year was that?
88. So it was 1988, my first year of college, and actually, I dated this girl, Joni, off and on. She followed me down to Kalamazoo. We dated for a while, and she lived a rough life. So she is no longer with us, unfortunately. Oh. But my friend Karen, who was the other member, there was only three of us, she actually lives in Ann Arbor now. So we talk about...
The high school girl.
Yeah, we talk about getting a little bit more of a thing going with the group, but it just hasn't happened yet. Yeah. So.
You need a Facebook page as well.
Well, I should. I should get something going.
At least a MySpace. Well, come on, Karen.
We were already talking about how Facebook is... overrated and overdone.
It is.
That was pertaining to a conversation that happened off air.
Yep. That is correct. So, yeah, it's just, I'm trying to revitalize it because, you know, in the building that I own now, I put my man cave in there. It's got a pool table. It's got a dartboard. You know, we've got an area we can have music. It's got a bar.
It's got
pinball machines.
You're going to like the rest of the tour of my place.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's nice. And what I thought maybe I could get together with it is because I don't want to try to get a liquor license. That's a lot of liability, insurance, blah, blah, blah.
Private club.
But now that up in Michigan, the whole ganja thing is legalized, I thought a place where you could go and just enjoy your smoke,
mm-hmm.
you know, and chill out and relax, have a good atmosphere, not have to worry about,
yeah,
you know, anything other than your smoke. So I don't know if it'll ever get going. The building's pretty old. I'm on my way out of it, honestly. If I can find a buyer, I will sell it.
The market is ripe.
The market is ripe, and I've got a big 5-story condo unit going up across the street from me that's just jacking my rate right up. So
that's good for the neighborhood.
Yeah, wait for that shit to go in, right, and they'll want to buy you out.
You know, everything downtown Holland is owned by Prince or DeVos, so one of them's going to come my way at some point. And,
yeah, nice.
And I don't like taking blood money, but I will.
Well, you know, just like this band that we're talking about.
Get you a piece of pie.
They're never going to be sellouts until they feel like they got a song that could sell out. Then they'd be more than happy to sell out.
Yeah, let's back up to that.
I don't want to be a cover band. I'm not a sellout. We write original. Oh, this is really good? Oh, let's see what we can get for it.
who is the guy, and I don't think we've told this story yet, but who was the guy that was getting a hold of E.L. McElhaney for the Tabasco song?
Oh, that was me, brother. I was going to sell the shit out of that.
Yeah.
He's like, who's hotter than Tabasco?
Yeah. You guys don't want to sell out? I'll sell your ass out. Give a fuck. We'll get that Tabasco money.
You know, this is kind of interesting. So Steve and I ran into each other. I told him what we've got here, you know, possibility for a podcast. Steve's had his podcast going for a while, Shit Musicians Say. And then this idea came up for this, and you, you know, you're talking about the secret punk rock smoking club, you know, is something from your past. I mean, there's like this theme that something happens, you know, 20 years after you're in your primeful youth. That
I don't think primeval is a word, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, it is now.
Primordial.
When you're creeping out of your primordial ooze.
So what is going on with us? Is this just an age thing?
It's
like
nostalgia.
Yeah, I think it's going back a little bit, taking it back to your roots, enjoying those times that you enjoyed the most and trying to relive that. I mean, what else can you do? You know, the world right now is such a shit show. You kind of have to cling to what you liked.
Yeah,
because there's so little of it being offered back these days.
Excellent. That's exactly.
That's the exclamation point you were looking for.
That is it. The wrap up for the show. And now it's time for us guys to put these beers down and go get a Jack and Broccoli. Right on. Bobby, man, seriously, great catching up with you. Yeah. Great seeing you again.
Hey, thanks, brother. Do it again sometime.
Flashback, absolutely. All kinds of
count
memories.
Me in for episode 12 or something.
Right on.
12
sounds
and 13.
Good.
Yeah, 13's my lucky number.
There we go.
Right on. Hey, thanks, man. Have a great, be safe on your way back home.
All right, too.
Awesome.
I was a beetle. I crawled across the floor, then I got stepped on. Now I don't crawl anymore. I was a beetle. I crawled across the floor, then I got stepped on. Now I don't crawl anymore. I was a beetle. I crawled across the floor, then I got stepped on. Now I don't crawl anymore. I was a beetle. I crawled across the floor, then I got stepped on. Now I don't crawl anymore. I was